This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business is powered by BossBolay.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome to Open for Business. I'm Rich Bradbury. Today I'm spotlighting Haldi, sugar-free turmeric mints, and the innovators, I guess, behind the world's first sugar-free turmeric mints. Launched back in February of 2023, they merged this timeless benefit of turmeric with modern convenience. They offer a unique sugar-free way to enhance daily wellness without the turmeric aftertaste or teeth staining, which some of you may well be familiar with, myself included. Now, these mints are crafted in a facility upholding the highest food standards. They come in diverse flavors, lemon, berries, peppermint, and apple, just to name a few to start off with. I'm sure there are more coming. And it gives this really refreshing experience, I'll be honest. And beyond their taste and health benefits, their commitment to excellence is evident in their broad availability, from Singapore's leading online marketplaces to some prestigious clubs and even on private jets, making wellness accessible anywhere. Now, their efforts have been recognized globally, earning them prestigious awards like the Singapore SME 500 and the Titan Business Startup of the Year 2023, marking them as a notable entity in the health and wellness sector. Now, as we go through this journey, I'm going to speak to Push about the inspiration behind these mints and what the future holds for the startup. Push, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Richard. Thank you for having me. And boy, what an amazing introduction. So,
not bad, huh?
Not bad, not bad.
Not bad, not bad. You've done pretty well. Now, let's rewind a little bit then, Push, and talk to me about this. What kind of inspired you to have this unique idea of combining what we know the health benefits of turmeric are with this convenience of mints? And how did you navigate that initial R&D phase to kind of bring this to life?
Sure. Well, that's a very good question. Well, you know, during COVID, the whole idea was that to find ways to boost immunity. Mm. And I'm originally from India, and I knew turmeric has a lot of benefits that really help you boost immunity. Mm. But then we were not really cooking Indian food as much as we'd like to. So which we sort of falling short of, let's say, our daily convenience or dose for that. And then I realized that we started eating turmeric in pill powder capsule form to sort of supplement the not use of turmeric every day. But that just felt very medicinal. And right. You know, it was very hard to build a routine around it. And I have young kids and they refuse to eat it in the medicine form.
Understood.
And at that same time, we were wearing masks during COVID and we were eating mint to keep our breath fresh. And then one day we realized that there were so many empty cartons of milk mints at home, which really didn't add any value just besides freshness of breath. So then I said, you know, won't it be cool that there's a mint which had turmeric? So it actually does help give me the benefits and also keep my breath fresh, for example. But there was actually nothing available, so which led me to this whole journey of exploration to try and see if there's anything anywhere in the world. The closest I came sort of was gummies and, you know, but again, those are very hard to build a routine around, and it's also quite expensive. So I was like, okay, if I were to do this, it needs to be accessible. It needs to be convenient as a way of consuming it. And I don't want the taste of turmeric because, you know, youngsters or the new generation or people in general may not like it.
Right.
So at that thought, a starter, I started exploring ideas and I went to India, which is, of course, where the birthplace of Ayurveda is, in Kerala. And that's where I started this whole journey of formulation. It wasn't easy, you know, trying to convince the R&D experts who've been doing this for centuries to tell them, I want a mint, but I don't want it to taste like turmeric. <You know?
laughs> I can imagine you had a few raised eyebrows.
I did. And they were like, are you serious about this? You really want to do this? So after a few multiple trials, I realized that, you know, I need to have it in the pure mint sense, which is what I wanted to actually have it, and which is why it took me to China. And that's where, you know, another sort of chapter began where, you know, if you think convincing Indians to make mint using turmeric was difficult, imagine the Chinese. So lots of hands were thrown up in the air and say, we don't even know what are you talking about? We don't even know what turmeric is. So that itself had challenges, and of course, notwithstanding, you know, the language barriers were certainly
for sure,
a part of the play. But luckily, I stayed in China for 3 years, so that I had my Mandarin. I can't say very good, but I sort of managed to get around a little bit. And then we started to formulate this whole idea. Obviously, the initial formulation came from India, and then they started to try, and actually, after a few trials, it actually what they sent really was pretty much what I wanted. And then the other challenge was that, you know, how do you get consumer trials? Because during COVID, everything was locked down and there was restrictions. But luckily enough that, you know, we were able to find a large set of people who from different nationalities and backgrounds, what have you, to really try, do blind tasting and stuff like that. So that really worked very well for us. And I knew that this product was a win because everyone had rated it 5 on 5 in the consumer trial. So Brilliant. That started the journey.
Brilliant. Push, just hold that thought. Let's take a short break here. Folks, I am speaking with Push Sharma. He is the founder of Haldi. They are the world's first sugar-free turmeric mints. We'll be right back after these messages here on BFM 89.9.
Open for Business will reopen in a few moments. Powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Bold, fearless Malaysians. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business is powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. Welcome back to Open for Business. I'm with Push Sharma. He is the founder of the world's first sugar-free turmeric mints. They're called Haldi. Push, just to kind of rewind on some of the things that you mentioned just a few minutes ago. The obviously, the name and the brand, of course, carry a deep cultural and health-related significance for people that don't know at home, of course, and who don't speak Hindi. Haldi is, the Hindi word for turmeric.
Yes.
Now, can you, I guess, elaborate on the process of embedding this essence of Ayurveda and this modern lifestyle into your identity and storytelling? Because there's a bit of both. I mean, I feel kind of, when I see the can or the tin, There's a sense of nostalgia as well for me, which I'll get to a little bit later on.
Well, that's a great question. I think the whole idea behind was to find a way that communicates the essence of Ayurveda in the packaging form, and the brand name Haldi is actually a mix of the word Haldi, which is turmeric in Hindi, and healthy. Mm-hmm. So the whole brand ideology came from creating something that is healthy. Or a better for you option.
Right.
And then if you really see, you know, if you see in the packaging, you know, the whole artwork itself, the way the Haldi font is written is actually a Malayalam script, which is where Kerala
is. Now?
And it was created just to create this, the name Haldi.
Wonderful.
Thank you. And then the H that you see in the Haldi, actually the bottom part is actually a turmeric leaf. Mm-hmm. So it actually sort of binds the whole brand name with the product or Haldi, turmeric, plant, etc. And then if you really see our mnemonic device, you know, the lady that's there, it's all about going back to roots. And given Haldi is a spice, turmeric is a spice, and she's sitting under in a meditative space representing Mother Earth and in the tree, which is the tree of life. So my whole idea was to create that sort of, to your point of, you know, convergence of that wellness, spirituality, mindfulness, what have you, in a package which appeals to a global audience.
Now, you see, you've described it very simply now, but I'm assuming that there were many iterations of design as you were going through it. And now you've hit, you know, you seem to have hit the nail on the head, but how many times were you kind of scratching your head and banging your head against a brick wall? How many different iterations of design did you have? There must have been quite a few, surely.
Well, actually, not really.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I was very fortunate. Yeah. Actually, the thing was, you know, I was very clear with the design brief that I had given. So we had a few companies that we had shortlisted. And then there was one company based in Singapore, and the founder and the lady who runs it, is also from the south of India. So given that the design brief with the images that I gave her, with the way I wanted to look and feel, really resonated well with her. And she's able to quickly understand what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. So and she came back with three options, the brand options with different, of course, we mixed and matched a bit. But I think the whole turnaround time was relatively quick because she understood the brief.
Yeah.
And you know, I was very fortunate. She was like godsend, where she was able to convert the brief in design and then able to sort of take us through that journey of ideation of the why of it.
Mm.
And I think that was very important for me to realize that, you know, it's important to give a clear brief to your designer, because then it makes the process simpler. And we didn't really have multiple going back and forth, actually. And just to add to that, my wife is a marketeer as well. She's sort of my in-house marketing guru and my advisor. So her inputs were invaluable in this experience.
Right. So. Well, let's continue talking about the packaging as well, because you know the packaging is something that stands out amongst the market. And I'll be honest, it does remind me of packaging that I used to see in the late 70s, early 80s, in the UK, where we would have metal tins that contained a product. I think they were called imps back then. And it was kind of like a licorice, very small, very strong licorice pieces, which obviously I've not seen for the last 30-something years. So when I first received your tin, there was an, as I say, there was an element of nostalgia, because we've lost that in our packaging for the last few. Everything is plastic and disposable and throwaway and oftentimes ugly, whereas yours is not only visually appealing, but it's reusable, it's recyclable. And of course, you applied for a patent and secured a patent for the packaging design, and that's quite a big achievement. Can you share insights into the patent process and how your IP protection contributes to your competitive edge, do you think?
Sure. Well, I think it was very important, because the time of effort and energy that went in designing the problem that I was looking to solve with the packaging part, you know, I mean, the idea was that I wanted it to fit. I'll just give you a bit of a background, right? I wanted the pack to fit into my wife's thinnest clutch bag, because every time we used to go out in the night, and most women, I realized, carry mints with them in one form or another. Mm. And it was very difficult to carry something that fit in her pack. So I actually measured her pack and made sure that, you know, the size, it has to be smaller than a credit card.
Right.
So all that things in terms of also the pack not being able to, you know, open easily when it's in the bag was important. It had to be touchless dispensing. You know, you could use one hand to slide open the pack, and it's hygienic as well. You know, during COVID, that was an important aspect. So keeping all those sort of big picture in mind, I thought, you know, given that we've spent so much time really creating the value behind the brand and the product, I must protect the design part.
Yeah.
So which is why you know, the law firm I work with are experts in the IP space. So we discussed what is needed, and you know, it's fairly standard, actually, to be honest. There was not like a very lengthy process, because they do it day in, day out.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there were stuff around, you know, photographs, design, artwork, also the write-up about the design process, etc., went into the application. And I was quite fortunate that we were able to convert that, of course, in a matter of months, but we were able to successfully convert it. And there wasn't really going back and forth about getting the patent.
Brilliant. I love the design of it. It's the one thing that really, obviously the mints are stellar, but you know, the packaging for me is something that it just makes me want to buy it, or even if I haven't purchased it before, it intrigues me enough that it draws me to the shelf to make me look at it.
Right.
Was that part of your thinking as well?
Absolutely. You know, the thing was that I didn't want to just launch another mint in the market with some benefits. I think the first thing that a user or a consumer connects with anything, even if it's, you know, pure food in that gender or clothes, it's visually how does it look. And that's what drives the consumer to go on the next phase of exploration with the touch and feel part. And then comes the taste. So I think the whole idea was that I had to make it, to your point, stand out and lose elements that really resonate with the brand's essence, like making it earthy, making it more, you know, the pastel colors that we've used, the way that we represented the trees with different colors, sort of really create that element of, you know, inquisitiveness with the consumer. That, to your point, was actually quite one of the things that we actually had to did. So just giving you another insight was when we submitted our entry for the PAC Global Award in New York, we had to really take photos of the PAC and shelved. How does it look with other brands? And interestingly, you know, I think there were 100 plus judges. They all unanimously said that the PAC stands out from on shelf. So, and the reason being is that it's very unique in terms of the way it looks and the way it feels, and which is why as a consumer, you get more for your money. You're not just getting a packaging, you're getting something that is recyclable, it looks good, and people are actually finding ways to connect and upcycle it.
For sure.
Which is quite exciting.
Yes, it will certainly be hanging around my apartment for some time at least anyway. Okay, we need to take a short break here. Folks, I'm speaking with Push Sharma. He is the founder of Haldi. They are the world's first sugar-free turmeric mints. We'll be right back after these messages here on Open for Business on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business will reopen in a few moments. Powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Open for Business is powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm speaking with Push Sharma. He is the founder of Haldi. They are the world's first sugar-free turmeric mints. They've won a whole bunch of awards, including the Singapore SME 500, the Titan Business Start of the Year 2023, obviously making a significant dent in the health and wellness sector. I want to talk to you, Push, about your manufacturing and safety standards. And I did a bit of research, and you're certified by the USA FDA, the BRCGS. Can you discuss the challenges and benefits of wanting to adhere to such high standards in food and safety? Because let's be honest, we know that there are other companies out there that do not push for all of these safety standards and do get away with it. But for you, obviously, this is something that was obviously quite important for you.
Oh, well, absolutely. I think, you know, the whole process of launching Haldi was trying to see what would work for me. And if it works for me, I hold stuff in very high standard myself. I need to make sure. And I think COVID gave us the realization that once we are living at home, we are actually making, we can be choiceful in our decisions around food, about what we're eating, habits, what have you. And of course, we have young kids as well. So that was important to give them the right things to choose if they had an option, which is why I think the whole idea of safety standards are really, really important. Like I would never second guess myself to not do it, because for a brand also, when you're launching something new in the market, you need to give the assurance to the consumer that the brand is of certain stature or it has certain credibility. And given it's a brand new concept, innovation as well, it was important that I had to check these boxes, which is with the FDA and BRCGS. And these are no longer a good to have. This was a must have for me. So I had to make sure that we have this protocol, because, you know, when you're launching a brand, you really need to, and it's also part of storytelling in a way where you're able to convince the consumer. And it's also questions that we actually faced during our consumer trials, where there were questions around, you know, taste, aftertaste, will it stain my teeth? What sort of safety standards would it have? Would it have a certification? So all those things really went into the whole process of production as well. So which is why this is important.
I mean, you're talking the talk. You have to walk the walk, right?
Yes, you know? yes.
Absolutely.
And also, I think we have big ambitions. We want to, we exhibited in Germany in ISM, and I want to go to Europe, take this to US. So in those markets, this is a must have.
Yeah.
So I need to have that. I needed to have that.
I mean, that's a nice segue to my next question, Push, is, you know, your kind of market adoption and your expansion. I mean, you've seen very good adoption in Singapore, and you're looking to expand into Malaysia, I know, which is why we're talking, one of the reasons why we're talking. Now, other than speaking to local media, what other strategies are you kind of employing to understand and adapt to new markets? Obviously, whilst retaining your brand consistency.
Right, right. Well, I think the brand consistency and the whole look and feel and the value proposition, you know, is the denominator in our growth. That will never change, no matter which market we expand to. And I think Malaysia was an obvious choice, given we have a lot of consumers who actually have been buying from here and have been shipping to Malaysia in any case. And plus, given the proximity to Singapore, I think it was a matter of time that, you know, I'd start to explore. And I think in some ways, it's also a right fit, given I'm able to service Malaysia as well as I would be servicing Singapore to begin with in this initial stage. And I was quite fortunate where I exhibited Haldi at an event last June at a Fit Summit, which is, you know, the health and wellness. It's quite a large summit. It's now called Beyond Active. And there I met a lot of companies who were in the health and wellness space. So one of the companies that I had actually met love our product, love our brand. They've actually bought a lot of stuff from us, taking it to their clients in Malaysia and done all the necessary, you know, feasibility assessment, you know, due diligence, pricing elasticity study, what have you. So the sort of the foundation is already laid for us. Now it was a question of when. And now that it come 2024, my whole idea is to scale the brand overseas. Yeah. So as a step in that direction, you know, we have already sort of planted seeds last year, and now we are really seeing to convert those. So hopefully in a matter of, hopefully soon, I keep my fingers crossed that I will be able to announce who our partners are in Malaysia, and the brand will, and the products will be in Malaysia as well. Hopefully,
see that I was just about to ask you where you were going to be selling it, and obviously I have to wait now and until you can officially tell me, because I mean, in my head, I know where I'm likely to see it, but I'm just. I'll talk to you about that offline. That's a conversation we'll have afterwards. Okay.
Sure.
Now, I have to take another break here, Push. But when we come back, I want to move on to the idea of sustainability and social responsibility, because obviously with your packaging and one thing or another, that becomes part of this discussion as well. So, folks, we'll be right back after these messages. I am speaking with Push Sharma, the founder of Haldi Mints, the world's first, sugar-free turmeric mints. We'll be right back after these messages here on BFM 89.9.
Open for Business will reopen in a few moments. Powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Banana from Malaysia. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Open for Business is powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. Welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Rich Bradbury. Today, I'm spotlighting Haldi, the innovators behind the world's first sugar-free turmeric mints. And I'm speaking to the founder, Push Sharma. We've had a big old chat so far about a whole bunch of stuff. Innovation genesis, brand storytelling, patents. And of course, that brings us round to sustainability and social responsibility. Two big topics of not just 2024, but I'm guessing for the past, well, I know for the past few years, it's become top of mind for a lot of people, particularly the younger generation who now seem to be making a big deal about this, as they rightly should be. Perhaps we've not been as on the ball in our generation, Push, and I do include you in this generation as we should have been. So there is obviously a focus on recyclable packaging and natural ingredients. How do you integrate that sustainability and social responsibility into your business model and your operations, not just your product?
Sure. Well, that's a very important question. And I think, you know, the good thing is I started with a white canvas. I was starting afresh. So I really knew what is it that I would want, not just for myself, but also for my kids and, you know, so on and so forth, the younger generation, like to your point. So I think to have something which is sustainable, eco-friendly is no longer a good to have. It's a must have. So those were certain things that I had to make sure that when I'm creating something, I may as well do it the right way. So which also then allows as a brand to enter different places which one would normally not get entry to because of certain barriers of, you know, a lot of plastic, what have you. So I think the two things we did was that once was the we made sure that the our packaging, you know, the seal was PET, which is recyclable. And also once the and then the pack itself, which is the mint pack, it's made of high quality recyclable steel. So those are the two things that I said I must do this just so that it allows me two things. One, I'm a conscious brand that I'm making sure that I'm doing good to the environment, to what have you. And it also sort of works, blends well with our whole, you know, if you see our pack, slide of our pack, it says back to roots. So it's a way that it sort of conveys that message that, hey, we are a sustainable brand. Mm-hmm. We are, you know, rooted in sort of earth and, you know, trying to do good for the planet. So which is why that was one important play, and also it sort of helps us also create a part of storytelling around that of sustainability. It's eco-friendly, you know, and then we were very fortunate that we were selected to be to exhibit at the Conscious Festival, which actually happens in the UK as well. And that also opened a lot new doors for us, because it was not something that we had actually really thought that this is a market which will really come calling. But I was very fortunate that it was a market that sort of people reached out to me and say, you know, this is very good. We have switched to this because of XX fact, not just because the brand is nice, the taste is nice, but because there's an environmental angle to it, which is good for you.
Now, obviously, with a product like this and your packaging, as nice as it is and as recyclable as it is, it's a substantial jump in cost for manufacturing as well. Now, that decision to be more profitable or more sustainable must have been a difficult decision, I guess, because, and I don't mean to you know, on a personal level, I'm sure you would have been, you know, I want to be sustainable, I want to do all of these things. But when you are looking for funding, for example, or maybe you're trying to speak to VCs or people who want to invest in your company, when you tell them, I want to use steel, and surely there must have been a moment of people saying, well, why would you do that? It costs you far more money to manufacture like this. You could have a lot more revenue if you change the way in which you package your product.
Right. Well, I think the way I look at it is as I'm in for the long haul. So it's not something that I'm looking for a very short-term period. My horizon is much longer, which means that I need to be true to myself and what is it that I really believe in and what matters to me. And I think I will not compromise on quality, on aspects that really value to me and also to younger generation, you know, given, you know, we are trying to build a legacy here and, you know, leaving something which will last longer than us. So keeping those elements in mind, I think it's not always about money. Of course, it's important, but I think if I'm able to create something that's longer term, I think that is really where I see the value, which is why, you know, I didn't want to compromise on quality and you know, and I think that's something I really believe in.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. Nice to hear an entrepreneur say it's not always about the money.
Yes.
You know? Okay. Now, every startup, every entrepreneur who I've ever spoken to, amongst the thousands that I've spoken to, it's never plain sailing. You know, there's always problems, challenges, funding issues, HR issues, founders arguing one thing or another. What kind of challenges did you come up against in the early stages of Haldi? And how did you manage to overcome them to get to where you are now?
Okay. Well, I think that's a really important question, which sort of, you know, like talked about the why. I think my advisors have been extremely critical of me in terms of the way I was building the brand. And, you know, they've really challenged me on every step of the way. And so much so that, you know, I was really questioned about stuff that I was doing, what the why. So, which really made me think about the whole pitch and the whole really reason to believe or reason to exist in a very cohesive way. So I had to make sure that I'm covering, you know, checking all the boxes and, you know, dotting the T's and, you know, I mean, crossing the T's, dotting the I's. So in that process, that was one big challenge to be able to convince my advisors, you know, and they posed things to me that made me really think and made me focus in that direction to make sure that I'm getting it right. And I was actually, and with that sort of push, pun intended, I was able to make sure that I do exactly what is meant to be done and not really shortchanging the process of ideation, of creation, production. Because there have been a lot of issues. I mean, not issues in the sense, there have been a lot of challenges along the way. And I think one of the biggest challenges I felt was prior to launching was the whole logistics part. Because remember, this is still during COVID when I started this. And then I was not sure of when the shipment will actually get on the ship, when will it leave the port, when it's going to arrive to Singapore and what have you. But then I said, you know, it's not under my control. I can do nothing about it. What I could do is make sure the backend is robust, is working.
Yeah.
So yeah. we had prototypes. So actually we went to the marketplaces where we listed initially, and we got listed there at the beginning. So we did all that background work, had a warehouse in place. So so the minute the shipment would arrive at the warehouse, we were already ready for business.
Right.
So I did that as a way to prior to launch, and I think after launch. I think one of the biggest challenges as a bootstrap brand is to pay upfront listing fee to some of these big establishments. It continues to be a problem. And I think so I have to be very choiceful in the way I see expanding the brand in the mm-hmm. place that I want to see it. So with that in mind, I had to find alternatives. So which is why, like I said, you know, we went into F&B, we went to the fitness stores, gyms, what have you, including private jets, the American Club, whatnot. So I think I was able to find alternative ways within my means, which I think it also helped me connect with the right consumer.
Right.
And able to drive that awareness of the brand versus being one of many in a shelf and sort of competing with the big, you know, the big giants for shelf space. I didn't want to do that. And I don't have the money at the point, at least to invest, to just throw behind that sort of marketing.
And I think you're an entirely different kind of brand to be doing that anyway. You know, it's a very niche, but very standout brand that I think, as I said to you earlier on, appeals to a certain demographic right now, but it seems to have a much potentially wider audience, I feel.
Right. Well, I've been fortunate. My, you know, the youngest consumer is almost 3 years old. And
right.
and my oldest consumer is 95 years old.
Fantastic.
So, and it's not something that it was not sort of planned or designed in that fashion. It was just people are just adapting. You know, embracing it because they like the taste of it.
Yeah.
And of course, the packaging is unique to that extent. So I think in that context, and you know, like just to that note, kids are enjoying it. You know, the young adults, I have teens, right? So they're in that whole category is huge because they eat a lot of mints because Singapore, you can't eat chewing gums, right?
Right.
So this becomes the next best thing sort of available in the market. And they love the whole packaging to it and they're finding ways to reuse it. I know sort of a lot of these young kids I know have made it into purses.
Right.
I have kids stuck it on the fridge. So there's finding alternative ways to upcycle it. And so that's been quite an exciting, it's been quite an exciting insight for us as well.
I expect a marketing campaign for how are you recycling your Haldi tins? You should be doing that. And if you're not, I already claim that was my idea.
All right.
Okay. Okay. Just to move on then, I've got a couple more questions before I let you go. Obviously, you know, you're in your fairly nascent stages of this brand, but I assume that you don't just want to end with mints. Maybe I'm sure you've got other things in the pipeline that you're thinking about a little bit further down the line. Is there anything that you can discuss with me that you are thinking about in terms of product development?
Well, you know, it's as a you know, as an inventor, let's say, it's always in the back of your mind to, hey, what else can we do? And so you know, but at the same time, I think I have to be very conscious in terms of what's the bandwidth we have,
right.
And also what do you want to really focus on right now?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of really, you know, keeping too many SKUs, you know, too many products, I would rather focus on the ones that we have and
right.
build that and create that sort of, you know, set a position in the market where you have a certain respectable position in that category that we play in. So at the moment, the full focus is only on driving scale of
right.
the what of the brand of the range we have. And again, you know, the good thing about mints is that there are over 100 flavors.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
just this particular you know, segment is huge.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so at the moment, it's, you know, it's all hands on deck is on making sure that we are driving scale in what we have, and of course, introducing new flavors over in due course.
Okay. Now, my last question for you then, you already kind of told me that the business is bootstrapped.
Yes.
So I won't delve too much into that. But let's talk about you just a little bit to wrap up with. entrepreneurship can be often a lonely journey and difficult and challenging. Late nights, early mornings, coffee shop ramblings, fights amongst spouses. You know, what would you say you've learned about yourself, and rather the key lessons for entrepreneurship that you've taken away from this journey?
Right. Well, I think the like I started, you know, when in our conversation, I said it's important to know the why. I think for most entrepreneurs, a lot of people get into entrepreneurship and they all get excited about the whole startup concept. And it's, you know, it's quite sexy, trendy, what have you. But you really need to know the why behind it. You know, what is it that you're doing? Why is it that you're doing what you're doing or rather want to do? So I think that's been one very big part of the journey that I've been on. The other important thing is, you know, to use feedback as a gift. Yeah. And that's something that my wife always says, that, you know, you must be open and receptive to getting feedback, because that will just help you in your journey. And it has certainly helped me, whether it's good or bad. Mm-hmm. I do really value feedback a lot. So that would be another advice that I would give. The other thing I've learned is, you know, you can't, it's not one size fits all. You can't please everyone there. So in the health space and wellness space, there's just too many things going on, and I can't really check all the boxes. But I'd rather you know, make sure the consumer that who's liking what we're doing, I just keep making sure he's happy and similar consumers are happy. You know, we have 7 billion people in the world. I just want 10% of that and I'm happy.
Yeah.
And I think the another important part, you mentioned this about entrepreneurship being a lonely journey. I think it's important to disconnect to reconnect. And I think I do a lot of that in terms of, you know, taking short getaways. You really need to find ways to, you know, sort of, you know, nurture, you know, sort of give yourself physical and mental breaks, you know, so find a way to unwind in a sense. And, you know, that's important. So I would say that would be my few takeaways for entrepreneurs who are in this journey.
Push, thank you so much for your time today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me, Richard.
My pleasure.
Have a healthy day.
I will indeed. Folks, I've been speaking with Push Sharma, the founder of Haldi, the world's first sugar-free turmeric mint, launched on February of 2023. If you missed any part of this show, go and download the podcast. You can get it wherever you normally get it from. I recommend you use our BFM app. That's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play, or just head over to our website. It is bfm.my. On BFM 89.9, the business station.
Are you open for business? Register your company with bossbelay.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.